scrolling for August 4th, 2020. I'm Steve Fodor.
I'm Chip Hessenflow.
And we're just a couple of guys sitting around talking about things that are important to us. Hopefully they're important to you. And if you need more information, there's so many great ways to find more information this week. Chip, I have to go to school this week. Chip, it's time. Summer, spring break is over.
All right, so spring break is over, or summer break is over.
Both.
For you,
yeah.
The teachers, but not necessarily the kids. The kids may have another week or so, or as COVID-19 turns out, maybe they have another month. You never know, Steve.
Oh, yeah. The plans are in place, and the plans keep shifting, and you never know is maybe the headline for 2020. 2020,
very flexible.
You
very
never
flexible.
Know. Yeah, it will be fine. Everything is fine. Everything is fine.
Film at 11.
Brings us to our film at 11, our movie of the week. You got to see a very interesting film this week called Go Back to China.
Yeah, it's called Go Back to China. This is a really interesting film, and I would recommend this film. In fact, I'm going to go ahead and tell you, I'm going to say 75 out of 100.
Really?
I wouldn't say that this is the greatest film ever, but what I think is, I think the messaging is real important. And the messaging is that, for our viewers, as the people we are, Steve, we don't get a chance to live in the Chinese culture very much.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is a good place to look at a different culture, because the story is a gentleman who owns a factory, and they make stuffed toys in China. He sent his daughter to the United States to go to design school. And she's lived here for a long, long time. So she came over when she was young because the parents divorced. The father has supported her and her mother. But she went to design school. She seems to be blowing a lot of money. Certainly has an idea of what money can buy, but not really how much what it takes to earn that type of money. So her father ultimately cuts her off from the money he's sending, and she has to go back to China, and she's going to work at her father's factory. Hmm. And so where the story evolves is we have this spoiled person who really has unrealistic expectations. Imagine maybe many young people who, you know, they're at home, there's air conditioning, there's cable TV, they've got all this available to them, and now they're going to go out in the real world, and they're going to see, like, oh my goodness, why did grandma and grandpa live so well? Well, it took a lifetime to get that in many mm-hmm. ways. Well, dad has cut her off, and he's going to show her how the factory produces the stuffed animals, how they sell to the department stores, and who will sell their products, and just how much pressure and what it really takes for them to get this manufacturing business up and running to support all these people. During the course of this movie, she's going to become a lot more empathetic with the workers. Dad pays for a cafeteria down there, but dad won't eat at the cafeteria. It's not good food.
Hmm.
And so she has something to say, well, what is the alternative? Well, the alternative is that many of them wouldn't eat. She realizes how much they get paid, and it doesn't sound like a lot, but for the people working there, listen, they came from all over the place to work at this place. And when dad goes and he's selling to the stores and stuff, there's a lot of pressure because he says it multiple times. He goes, all these people are dependent upon me to sell the products so that we can build them so I can pay them. And she recognizes all the sacrifices her father has been able to do. There is a scene that there's an opening moment with it, and it's dad sitting around the breakfast table with his son and daughter, Christian and Dior, and his daughter. And this person who is not his stepmother, it's a young person, maybe a hired help. And during this program, dad turns to his left, and the lady gets down on her feet and puts on dad's shoes and ties his shoes. Well, she looks at this like, oh my goodness, I'm almost horrified by it. Well, later on in the movie, they go and they get their hair done. They get a massage in their hair and stuff like that. It only cost, you know, I don't know what it cost. Maybe it cost a couple dollars. Doesn't cost a lot of money. And this stepmother or this girlfriend and the daughter are talking. And all of a sudden, the daughter recognizes that this was that person's job before she became dad's assistant, dad's love interest, whatever it is. And that there really was a reason for her to help her father because, one, the father paid for her brother's education. He's a second born in China with the one child policy. He couldn't do anything. There's just so many layers of things that get done by the father. And while on the outside it looks horrifying to maybe a person who lives in LA and is not aware of it, it certainly makes it much more empathetic that the father's really dialed in. He may be clueless in some areas, but he's really dialed in on how he can really impact people and help them. And he makes a lot of sacrifices, and those sacrifices earn him a lot of money, which allowed him to support her mother and the daughter on this lavish lifestyle that they really just didn't understand how it was going to take place. She, during this time, grows. She becomes a designer. She makes some mistakes, as young people do. And this is a really interesting story. Hmm. And I think that even if you're not a person who has interest in Chinese culture, I think that many young people would benefit because maybe they could understand a little bit about how hard their parents work for what they have, and that even though they have these things available, these parents may not even be perfect people, and no one's perfect, but also a little more understanding of their areas that they could improve upon. Anyway, I like this movie. I said 75 out of 100. Hmm. I think that people should attempt to watch it.
Boy, the trailer does not do this one justice at all. So I'm happy that you enjoyed this as much as you did, because sounds like a great story for the whole family to talk about these long, deep issues. Boy, the trailer does not do it justice.
Well, I don't think, like I said, I don't think this is Academy Award winning or anything like that. But yeah, you can go on iTunes or Amazon or whatever, and it's available to you. You can rent it. And when I watched it, it certainly hit me in a good way, because I once again, I do think young people in particular really misunderstand how hard it is to put the home available to them, to have the food on the table, to have all the things that they are just taking as a given. Mm-hmm. And then the other maturity is when you recognize as a young person that your parent is not a perfect person and that they have blind spots in their lives and they just may struggle with those too. And when you can get beyond that to grow into your own person on who you want to be and not live their life, but live your life, there you go. There's a third part to it. There is something very nice to be said.
Nice. Let's see what Stacy saw.
Hi, everyone, for the final time. This week I watched Host, the Shudder original British horror that was written, directed, edited, and released during lockdown that has a lot of people talking and for good reason. A group of friends have been meeting weekly on Zoom to catch up, drink, and have some fun during lockdown. It's Haley's turn to arrange the activity and she hires a medium to hold a seance. However, things take a turn for the worse when the others don't take it as seriously and it becomes a fight for survival. When the pandemic disrupted the film industry, it was really only a matter of time before it became the focus of new stories, told in interesting ways reflecting the situation we're facing. And as the creative minds continue to busily make things while stuck at home, jokes that nobody would want to read or watch them started to make the rounds online. Well, it turns out in this case the joke is on the jokers, because Host is a well thought out found footage film that manages to be realistic to the times, spooky, and never outstays its welcome. The entire film is confined within a Zoom meeting, complete with the connection issues and glitches we've all encountered recently whilst using it to reach out to others whilst we stay in. Here those limitations are played up nicely to be part of both the regular meeting experience as well as something more sinister, and that brings a nice chill to proceedings. It was a great touch to use the interface for the closing credits too, continuing the remoteness of the film and the production itself, as the writers and director never met the cast in person and the filming and editing was all done remotely. Host is a snappy flick, clocking in at just under an hour. It builds tension and chill without dragging things out and feels like the perfect length for the subject matter. You can choose to fully immerse yourself by watching the film on whatever device you've been using for your video meetings, or you can enjoy it on a big screen, and it still draws you in because the experience is what we've all been dealing with lately. The cast is great at making you feel that they are long-standing friends. They give relaxed performances that build with fear as things start to get scary. Their reactions and interactions, they feel real the whole way through, like they've been together forever. And I think that what may have been one of their biggest challenges filming turns out to be a huge benefit to this believability in the film as a whole. The cast had to film their parts in their own homes. This is an impressive feat of filmmaking under what can be best described as extraordinary circumstances. Every member of the cast and crew has had work so much harder to make Host, and that work, in my opinion, really paid off. It delivers laughs and scares that don't feel forced, and gives viewers a fun found footage take on life in the time of COVID. It works so well because it mimics what we've all been dealing with this year, and viewers can easily see themselves or friends in the characters in the film, such as the couple that moved in too soon, and those who moved back to their parents and are suddenly feeling very stifled by the lack of freedom. By playing on common experiences, you get to feel like a part of this film. Their experience is your experience, and the best horror films always show you something real and of their time. Host is very relevant right now, and long after the pandemic is over, it'll be a novel way to look back at what happened, and almost a time capsule to show how both people in general coped, and how filmmakers found new ways to keep going. Well, that's all from me on Too Much Scrolling's final show. It has been an absolute pleasure to talk horror with you all, to hopefully suggest some films that you might have missed otherwise, and of course working with the guys has been great fun. I'm really going to miss this. And if you happen to miss me, you can check out my new website, thehorrormoviemaven.com, as well as my upcoming podcast of the same name, starting in October 2020, just in time for Halloween. So until then, keep safe, stay spooky, and happy viewing until we meet again.
Thank you, Stacey. Thank you for all of your reviews. We look forward to hearing more from your adventures in the future. Opening, or more likely streaming this week, we've got a whole list of movies, Chip. We are working on volume this week.
There is a volume, and Steve, there may be a movie that may have a little interest to you.
Maybe. The first one is called Max Reload and the Nether Blasters. This is the story of a small-town video game store clerk who goes from zero to hero after figuring out a video game that everybody else is trying to figure out, and he's the Mary Sue that knows how to play the video game the best and becomes the warrior. We've seen this story before, Chip.
ColecoVision, Steve. Blast from the past. This has Will Wheaton as our narrator.
Uh-huh. That sounds familiar, doesn't it? That Will Wheaton would tell a story like this. This is very, very similar to Armada, the book by Ernest Cline, which Will Wheaton did the audiobook for. That story was based on The Last Starfighter, which you might remember that movie about the guy who was the master at the video game and became the highlight of another force. Except for there's one kind of different twist to this one. This one involves video gamers being possessed and running amok. So our protagonist has to destroy all these zombie video game players. I wonder if that's symbolic of anything, Chip.
I don't know. Maybe we should go down south in Illinois and find out what's going on in Carbondale.
Yep, there's a movie called I Used to Go Here, which is the story of a Chicago author who isn't quite happy in her life and goes back to her roots at college at Southern Illinois University in Carbondale, Illinois. There she finds her former writing professor, played by Jermaine Clement, and
from Flight of the Conchords, right there.
That's right.
He offers her a job. It looks like it's a lot of fun. This is my pick of the week. Let's go to the next one, Steve.
There's a movie called The Broken Hearts Gallery, executive produced by Selena Gomez. This movie is not for you and not for me, Chip. This is definitely a story written for a young woman.
Yeah, I'm not sure if it was written for, it's got to be millennials or Gen Z. But anyway, it's called The Broken Hearts Gallery. It's going to be available. It's about a woman who decides after a breakup that she's going to take the mementos she's put together from this relationship. She's going to place them in a gallery, and then other people get to do the same, and it's a story. Hmm. Hey, how about that? Steve, what about a story about a rapper?
There's a movie called How to Fake a War, in which rock star rapper Harry Hope decides that his concert needs more publicity, and so he decides to fake a war to make this publicity happen for this concert. This is ridiculous.
So what it looks like is he made some money being a rapper, and he wants to elevate himself. He wants to bring peace to the world. In order to do it, he hires a public relations consultant to stage a war that he can break up, and then hope is dope, Steve. That's available. It is a comedy.
Jay Farrow as Harry Hope and Katherine Parkinson from The IT Crowd, basically playing the same character that she played in The IT Crowd in this one.
All right, Steve, let's bring out a Mick Jagger.
Yeah, there's a Mick Jagger movie that's finally going to be available this week. We talked about this one back in March in the old world. Remember the old world back in March, BC, before coronavirus? We talked about a movie called The Burnt Orange Heresy. This is a trailer featuring Mick Jagger in a prominent role as somebody who has an artist in his backyard who is working on his next work and spins out of control in all of this.
It's a Sony Pictures classic, Steve. Yeah. Stars Donald Sutherland, and it's going to be available. Steve, let's go and find Indiana Jones' son and see what he's doing.
Yeah, there is a movie called The Tax Collector featuring Indiana Jones' son, Shia LaBeouf, as a member of a really dark-seated gang in L.A.?
He's a tax collector. He basically is an enforcer to bring money to to the gangs to pay to the central gang. This is certainly a departure from a Peanut Butter Falcon, and it looks pretty dark.
Reminds me of Scarface for the 21st century.
Well, there you go. Steve, I'm looking for Iceman. Is he available?
Yes, he's got a scarf. Val Kilmer is in a movie this week called Pay Dirt. Since the Top Gun movie didn't materialize that we were hoping to see over the summer, and it will come to us later, we get Pay Dirt instead. This is the story of a parolee who teams up with his old crew to find a buried bag of cash stolen 5 years ago, and Val Kilmer's there in a scarf.
Well, you know, you got to be in shape to be in the military. So, all right, let's go with our next one, Steve. Let's go to Northwest Missouri and find a scary movie for us.
Yeah, this one's called Below the Fold. This is a story of a young lady who vanished from her home in southwestern Missouri, and 10 years later, two reporters uncover the harrowing new details and go through a very dark labyrinth of investigation.
Steve, I'm feeling French. Is there an animated movie for me?
Yeah, there's an animated adaptation of the French TV show Sam Sam coming to America this week. Sam Sam is a very small superhero who has his own flying saucer, family and friends. This is a French TV show. This is for children. This is not a family animation. This is specifically, I think of the Little Einsteins when I see this animation. But it's pretty. I'm sure that the kids will love Sam Sam.
Steve, I'm feeling kind of gritty. I'm ready for rock and roll, and I want to go to Detroit. Is there a documentary for me?
Are you sweaty and dirty? Are we talking about the 70s?
Exactly. A time where rock and roll got very glamorous or very, very light. So no James Taylor or Queen needs to be here. We need rock and roll, Steve.
Yes, there's a documentary this week called Cream, America's only rock and roll magazine. This is the story of a music magazine launched in 1969. And this is a magazine that didn't do anything for me. This was beyond my era. But you remember this magazine, right?
I do. I mean, if you went to Tower Records and you're right next to like Rolling Stone and Spin Magazine, would be Cream. Cream certainly had a look of a very like a fanzine type thing. It was kind of, it was very rock and roll, Steve.
Okay, there you go. Rock and roll.
Book it.
Brings us to our book it, our book of the week. There's a book that's been on my shelf for 11 years now, and I've not been willing to read it until this week. This is The Chris Farley Show, written by Chris's older brother, Tom Farley Jr. It is the biography of one of the world's funniest, silliest Saturday Night Live actors, Chris Farley.
You mean the Chippendale dancer, Steve?
The Chippendale dancer, the motivational speaker, the guy who just rushed into a scene and did something so super silly and made us absolutely fall in love with him, Chris Farley. Unfortunately, we lost to substance abuse at a very young age, and this is a very sad biography because of that.
Well, let's talk a little bit about maybe what created this person, because, you know, he wasn't always a big man with a tiny jacket. He was at some point.
Did you just say big man with a tiny jacket instead of fat man in a little coat? Really? And that's the essence of who Chris Farley was. He, one of the chapters of this book is called Fatty Fall Down. And he was that guy, that big personality who came into a scene in Saturday Night Live, into a scene in a movie, and did some slapstick thing that you would not expect somebody of his girth to do, and just made us laugh. And we loved him for that.
But inside, he certainly wasn't enjoying it as much mm-hmm. as his exterior was showing.
That's right. Chris's brother offers his viewpoint on what happened to Chris. He starts with an early memory about Chris. Chris had a really deep-seated fear of the movie The Exorcist at a young age. He was deeply scarred by the idea that an evil spirit inside of your body and your mind could control your actions. And
well, weren't we all? That is The Exorcist, right?
That is The Exorcist. I was scared of The Exorcist when I saw it at a young age. Chris's brother here makes this the theme of the story of Chris Farley. Was he was terrified of being out of control, having something else control his mind and his body, and drugs became that for him. It was kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy.
So faith was very important to Chris. Tell us a little bit about how that shows up.
Yeah, he was raised Irish Catholic. He was deep into his faith as a Catholic. He went to church every Sunday. He really believed that anything he did on Saturday could be forgiven. That is a big part of the Catholic doctrine. And he was seeking that connection. The story of the book, there are three different priests who are part of this story, who shared their life with Chris to try to help him with his demons.
So tell me a little bit about maybe how his father made this son.
That is a really sad statement that Tom Farley Sr. was an oil tycoon. They had a lot of money, and Tom Farley Sr. was a guy who indulged himself in food and alcohol. He was 600 pounds when he died. He and Chris would binge both food and alcohol together. It was a totally codependent relationship, the two of them. And there's so many stories in this book about trips that the two of them took together, just the two of them, and the gluttonous activities that they took part in are just heartbreaking.
So tell me a little bit about addiction and how it impacted his life.
Addiction is terrifying to me. I am scared, like Chris was, of the idea of being out of control.
Sure.
And the idea is helping somebody. But the question becomes, what can you do with a person who is addicted? It's not an easy situation because that addiction is so overwhelming. Everyone in this book has their "if I had only" story. Everybody interviewed for this book feels like they could have, should have done something for Chris.
And one of the challenges is when you become a public figure, it becomes even more challenging.
Yeah, Chris went through rehab more times than I can count in this story. He was in and out of rehab.
Four or five?
He was in and out of rehab for a period of years of his life. And at one point, he wound up in a psych ward. And the story is that when a visitor came to visit him in the psych ward, she found that the staff had brought him cocaine. Yeah. In this situation. That stardom, that fame, certainly helped him in some ways. But boy, at the same time, some nurse, some doctor somewhere got cocaine for this man who that didn't help.
Well, we've got something that's also interesting. A part of this is there's something, if you go deeper than the person, it has to be what drives a person to be a comedian must also be a destructive behavior. Mm-hmm. And at some point they either mature out of it or it consumes them. And for Chris, it looks like he got consumed.
Yeah, he was constantly seeking praise and love. Mm-hmm. He saw himself as a clown. He said this so many times to so many different people in this narrative. He saw himself as a clown who no one actually loved. He felt that he needed to be out of control to make people laugh all of the time. That's what he verbalized in what he was feeling. He felt like nobody loved him, and the only people who paid him any attention were the people who were laughing at him when he was out of control. That's
a person who's got a self-esteem issue. Mm-hmm. And really, it's a mental challenge. I mean, a therapy certainly could help with that. Yeah. But obviously, it's destructive to them. But let's talk about some of the positive things that could happen from him, from this moment. He was up for some interesting roles, mm-hmm. and he missed out on them because he passed away.
And we missed out. We missed out on so much of Chris Farley because the addiction took him from us too soon. I don't know if I've ever actually said this on the show before, but I don't like the movie Shrek. I don't like the musical Shrek. Every time my students say, "We should put on Shrek," I immediately say no. Because the truth of the story of the making of Shrek is that was supposed to be Chris Farley's breakout voice acting part. He recorded hours of audio to be Shrek. And Shrek was drawn from Chris Farley's persona. It would have been a completely different film. The franchise would have been completely different with Chris's voice at the helm. But they didn't have enough audio to make that happen. And they had to scrap every bit of it. And then Mike Myers had to come in and give us the Shrek that we know today.
And that was a Spielberg company. DreamWorks was the production of that. So they really were looking to put a lot of money in hopefully make it a franchise. It ultimately did turn into a franchise and a very successful one for DreamWorks.
But it would have been completely different. It would have been so different. It was a lot, the original story was a lot more about a story very similar to Chris's, where Shrek had low self-esteem. He felt like he couldn't be a part of normal life. He felt like he had to shut himself out and live alone because nobody loved him. It's actually a lot sadder that way, that story. And I still don't like Shrek to
Donkey.
This day.
Donkey. All yeah. right, so Steve, let's wrap this up and tell us, what should we leave this story knowing?
I wish that there was a simple answer. I wish that there was a simple way to help people who are struggling, who know that what they're doing is destructive, but they are so stuck in it. Chris never understood the fact that he was beloved in his inner circle. He had so many friends. He was so beloved, and he never was able to see it. People cared for him on a level that was like family. The stories that are told in this book, from Chris Rock to, you know, Adam Sandler and David Spade, explaining how much they loved him and they were pulling for him and they wanted him to succeed, but he just couldn't see it. I don't know what to do. I don't know what to do with people like that. Is just keep telling them, keep showing them how much you love them, and maybe we can help the people that need the help the most.
This is the deal was, is he was around successful people, and mm-hmm. he was a successful person. So there's the real challenge of that also, mm-hmm. is that sometimes you fail to see how far you've gone.
That's right. This is a really sad biography. It has a lot of words that make you think about your life, about your decisions, about your friends and your family. There was so much joy that is not written in here because of the brother's perspective on who his brother was and the sadness of losing him. But I still say that this is something that you should look into if you're facing demons, or if you know someone who is. Find the help that they need, find the help that you need. The Chris Farley Show from 2009.
Scroll with it.
Brings us to our scroll with it. You know, 140 days of sitting in my basement, Chip, I've been watching a lot of Pluto TV.
Well, we're having a great big consolidation going on in the industry. A lot of changes going on. We've seen Time Warner be bought up by AT&T. We've seen Amazon and Apple and Netflix. I mean, everybody's coming up with a streaming platform. Pluto is unusual in mm-hmm. the sense that it is a free platform, and they also have content that seems to be one show.
Well, they have content that seems to be one network, because CBS Viacom purchased Pluto TV not quite a year ago now. Okay. And a lot of their content is from the Viacom properties. But yes, there are five channels that I watch on Pluto TV, and I added a new one this week. That is the Star Trek channel. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, you can go to Pluto TV and watch Star Trek completely free. It has commercials. It's a commercial-based free service. But Star Trek is on right now, right next to the Doctor Who channel, right next to the MST3K channel, and the Riff Tracks channel.
So tell me about the Star Trek. Is it Leonard Nimoy and William Shatner, or is it the Next Generation?
They are playing the Next Generation right now. They're going through those episodes currently, and I'm not sure where they're going to head next, if they're going to go to the next series, which would be Voyager or Deep Space Nine, or if they're going to go back to the original series with Shatner and Nimoy. But okay. It's CBS. They own the rights to those programs. They can put on whatever they want.
Okay. So we're looking for changes in this industry. CBS All Access has said they are going to rebrand at some point. But we also have some big announcements. Tell us a bit about Verizon and their relationship to Pluto TV.
Yeah, this is a very strange announcement that came on July 23rd. Verizon has signed a multi-million dollar deal with Pluto TV. And all of the chatter that I've been a part of has said, but Pluto TV is free. Anybody can watch Pluto TV. Verizon doesn't need to pay them for exclusive rights because it's not exclusive. This seems to indicate that there's going to be something that's going to change with Pluto TV, some kind of exclusivity between them and Verizon.
And it certainly could be. Like I said, with Time Warner and AT&T creating their relationship, brands like HBO and the Warner Brothers cartoons and things like that all come under AT&T now. Mm-hmm. Verizon certainly is looking for their exclusive content. Viacom, which is the owner of CBS, also owns MTV and Nickelodeon and things of that nature, certainly could create their own streaming platform on a mega level. Mm-hmm. So this is just part of the evolution of this market right now, and something just to keep an eye on.
And I will definitely be keeping an eye on it, because these are two properties that I engage in, Pluto TV and Verizon, who is my cell phone carrier. So I look forward to what's going to come of that.
Well, Steve, you know, we finished the entire canon.
Yes, we did.
Of Sherlock Holmes.
How about that?
With Professor Pamela Bedore. And it's a good time to now announce a new book that we will be starting on a new podcast called Sandwiches at Irregular Hours. So tell us a little bit about what we'll be exploring with Professor Bedore.
So next Tuesday, August 11th, you need to switch your dial to Sandwiches at Irregular Hours, our brand new podcast. It is brand new, even though we've had 123 episodes with Professor Pamela Bedore going through the canon of Sherlock Holmes. But so, starting on Tuesday...
So COVID-19 really does bring people together, Steve.
There you go. There. We found something positive in the worldwide pandemic. Good. Something good has happened in the last 140 days. Starting Tuesday, we are going to continue what we started with Sandwiches at Irregular Hours, and we're going to have a weekly book club now. You can join us. You can read along with us. We have dedicated the next year and made a list of 12 books to read, one a month. And we're going to get started on Tuesday with Devil in the White City. This is the story of the World's Fair in Chicago, written by Eric Larson, published in 2003.
This takes place in 1893, Steve, and there's some bad stuff going on in Chicago along with this fun stuff.
Uh-huh. This is the America's first serial killer happened to be operating in Chicago in 1893 at the same time as the World's Fair. And Eric Larson spins a wonderful narrative about those two events colliding at that time.
So for all our Chicago listeners, this is where Chicago really set out to make their international stage presence. They had annexed enough land to become the second largest city with population and overtake Philadelphia. So we truly became the second city mm-hmm. in 1893. So anyway, you can join us, you can read with us, and this is the book club we all want to be part of.
The book club we all want to be a part of. I love it. That's Sandwiches at Irregular Hours. Check your podcatcher for that on Tuesday. Read along with us. We would love to hear from you. We would love to have you be a part of this book club and to discuss it along with us. I don't know, Chip. I think we have enough information to survive another week. What do you think?
Only if we can come back next week, Steve.
Well, Sandwiches at Irregular Hours is going to come back next week, Chip.
Well, have a hot dog.
There you go. If you need more information, give us a call or a text. Our phone number is 805-410-4TMS. Our website is TooMuchScrolling.com. Our email is TooMuchScrolling@gmail.com. We're on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook. We're on Spotify and Stitcher and TuneIn Radio. And you can always ask your smart speaker to play the latest episode of Too Much Scrolling. I want to thank you again for listening to Too Much Scrolling. I'm Steve Fodor.
I'm Chip Hessenflug.
See you in the future. So we don't talk about
talk about is what I want to thank you for.